Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Mangum Talks TV. This is a reaction podcast for Season 2, Episode 6 of HBO's House of the Dragon. Spencer, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. We got to watch House of the Dragon. What? How could that not be a good day?
Well, there was some Damon in it. You may have not liked that. Could be bad.
Are you asking me what my views of the episode were?
Absolutely, I am. That's what we're here to do. What was your views of the episode? What'd you think of it?
I quite liked it. I felt like it was openly addressing some of my concerns with respect to certain of the characters and progression of the plot line, and there were signs that things were in motion and that there was an overall intent and purpose at play. So I thought it was well written. I thought it was interesting. I thought it had a fun theme going into aspects of humility and people in positions of power looking to those below them for either help or support or manipulation, who could say. And that was threading throughout the episode in a way I found quite compelling. So, yeah, this episode gets a solid thumbs up from me.
Yeah. I also liked it. It felt like it was like a setup episode with a high intensity plot line kind of threaded through it, right? The dragon rider piece, who's going to claim a dragon, is like really high drama scenes that they were able to sprinkle into something that continued to build the greater war. And the work of Missaria, you know, alienating the small folk against the current rulers of King's Landing. I mean, that was just chef's kiss. I mean, that was just fantastic from a plot perspective. It was all very consistent and interesting.
Was that the kiss you prefer to focus on when it comes to her character this episode?
Oh yeah, there's a little thing going on there. You know, we'll talk about that. I didn't know how I felt about that. It's interesting.
I find it interesting for a character that just said she always wanted to be Damon, and now she's macking with Damon's lover from season one. So looking at it from an aspect of that lens was interesting, but also the aspect of support, caring, two souls coming together. There's a lot to ponder and unpack. I think it's fair to say it's a change from the books, but we'll see where it goes.
My worry was that it was just people in positions of power seemed to continually use Missaria, either yes. Use her body or use her resources. And I was when Rhaenyra was kind of going in for the kiss, I was like, I hope this is being reciprocated.
What's the consent here?
Yeah, so it was being reciprocated. Like, I hope this is not just another person in a position of power that Missaria has, like, trusted and said, ooh, all right, maybe now I've finally found the person who is worthy of my allegiance and my loyalty, and then they just use her again. Well, it seems like Missaria was into it, so maybe it's okay. I don't know, but that was my first sort of knee-jerk with that, but I got to sit with that one for a little while. What did you think of the Dragon Rider piece of this? Sir Stefan Darkly getting lit up. Then it looked like maybe Adam of Hole with Sea Smoke. How did you feel about that whole thing?
I found it interesting because they were really pairing those two together of where the setup, he's the noble line, he's the best choice, he has the closest connection, he's the member of the Kingsguard, he's perfect, the gods will it, and it backfires on them in a dramatic and horrific kind of scene. I thought that was a well-filmed scene, and I thought they've done well with the Stefan Darkland character of him being secondary, but us still caring about him, so I thought that was well-executed. But then them tying it to the idea of almost just like a serendipity, or these being powers outside of their control and almost being a certain degree of hubris to even think that they fully understand this, that Sea Smoke then immediately goes and seeks out a new rider in the form of Alan of Hull. Adam of Hull.
It's Adam, yeah.
It was Adam, the younger brother. I like the pairing of that. I like how that ties in again to the themes of this. Apparently the name of the overall episode was The Small Folk, and the idea that a bastard beneath notice, one that's even ignored by his bastard father in favor of his elder brother, is instead sought out by the dragons and claimed as a rider. I like the idea of that, of where all of their plans have come to naught because this is so far beneath their notice they wouldn't have even pondered it. So I thought the fact that they paired those in the same way was a fun way of doing that.
Interesting. You saw that differently than I did, and it's not like I have any like negative reaction to how you saw it. I just didn't think of it that way. I was thinking more of they continue to tell us, both in the written material and some in the show, that the dragon chooses the rider. However, in the shows, we have not really seen that. We've seen a lot of riders choose the dragon. We've seen Aemon choose Vhagar, very much so, just climbed up on his back and just Vhagar was asleep and climbed right up, right? Dany, of course, you know, I'm putting in quotes, birth to dragons, but she definitely chose them, chose Drogon, the largest of the three. It seemed like Jon was choosing Rhaegal. So every, and in, you know, the source, of course, a lot of the examples of dragons being pawned as riders in the show seem to be either we put the egg in the cradle or, you know, they
the person makes the conscious effort.
Right? They were going and chasing them out, right? So every step of the way, the examples that we have in the show kind of undercut this like saying, this mantra, the dragon chooses the rider. And this is one where we finally got the dragon truly chose the rider. Now, there was a, I think I noticed that when Seasmoke was flying above, Seasmoke looked down and saw Adam looking at him, like looked down and like the, was like kind of perusing the ground and noticed Adam looking up at him. And that's when he did the hard turn. So maybe there's some element of looking for somebody who's interested in him, but all, that was as clear as it gets during that chase scene. And then like pushing him up against the boulder that Seasmoke was choosing Adam. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about consent concerns with Missaria. I've got consent concerns when it comes to Adam and Seasmoke. I think Seasmoke needs to go to an HR class immediately to discuss the idea of unwarranted attention because it was getting a bit much.
It was. However, here's what was going through my mind is like, I love that George makes the dragons as consistent as I think he can. He tries to.
Yes.
Because I like the inclusion of them as real things that we can quantify,
characters,
understand, rules around it, and it all is consistent. Like, I really enjoy that part of his particular fantasy epic. And when Sir Stephen Darkley was approaching Seasmoke, he was chicken shit. He was scared, and rightfully so, but he was so scared.
Chicken
and then even when Seasmoke bent the back and was like, come on, he was like, and when Seasmoke cornered Adam up against that boulder and was like, you know, interested clearly. Adam was scared to start with. But they did give us about 5 seconds of Adam relaxing well before Stephen Darkley started to relax. Like, we didn't even see Darkley relax, right? But, like, within a couple seconds, he started to relax and smile and actually smiled at Seasmoke before that scene cut away. And that, I really liked that because I was like, okay, this isn't necessarily just the dragon picking the rider. It's also, the dragon is like, there has to be something that the human is doing to indicate comfort, like, you know, like that their willingness to do this, that they don't just pluck one. I mean, it was more of a test, I guess is what I'm getting at. It was more of a test that he was giving him, and Adam passed that test. And that could make it consistent with the previous scene where there was a bit of a testing going on with Stephen Darkley and he just didn't pass. I guess it's
it'll be curious to see. It seems like next episode there's going to be a direct confrontation on the point. And I like that Rhaenyra herself is writing out, having chosen at many points in this episode that she very much is trying to pick up the mantle of Visenya so that people around her respect her and her capabilities because she views it that no one will respect anyone other than a warrior. She's now writing. You agree?
So she's back at people.
Oh, yeah, right across the face. It was her fault that she allowed him to no longer fear her. Like that line. But it'll be curious to see them unpack this next episode, why that worked. I like that theory. I think this also may even be an aspect, too, about, I don't know what degree Laenor said goodbye, but there may be a certain commonality connection there with lost love or lost rider that this guy is more closely connected to Laenor than Sir Stephen could ever even claim to be in terms of family descent and connections.
Yeah, it could be. It could be he somehow smells the Valyrian blood. I mean, we know that they can tell Targaryen blood, so maybe they're able to tell the Valyrian blood. Maybe skin color. Maybe maybe the area that he found it, like on Driftmark, you know, where the Valyrian family is. Yeah, it could be maybe, you know, it could be any number of things that he shares with Laenor. I do know that there was an awful lot of chatter and fan theories that Adam was just Laenor come back. Laenor had just come back to fight in this war.
A lot of pondering there, yes.
And it seems like the show has killed that. But that is not the case. That Adam is a true-born bastard, right? A true-born bastard.
That is an accurate statement, a weird one, but accurate.
It's kind of important, right? Because there was also a lot of theories on, like, well, they say they're the bastards of the of the sea snake, but are they really? And they seem to be representing that they really are the bastards of the sea snake. And this is just a new character. It's just Adam, and he's now flying sea smoke. So shout out.
Can I give you some richly deserved credit, by the way?
Yeah, fine.
Your theory last episode that we would see Aegon awake was proven immediately true.
Yeah, like, I thought that's what they're going for.
20 minutes into the episode, he is awake and having a confrontation with his younger brother.
Yeah, I felt pretty good about that one. But I think your broader point was correct, which is, like, don't expect this guy to be, like, up and rolling and, like, doing anything. Like, he's in
bed
and he's, yeah. And even if he starts to sniff it, Aemon's made it clear that he might just push him right back in bed. So, yeah.
How do you feel about my character growth daemon theory after some scenes this episode? It seems like this episode may have been leaning a little in the idea that there is an arc, goal with the Harrenhal visions.
Shout out that Viserys can come back. Keep getting them checks. It's fantastic.
Paddy Considine deserves them.
It's hard for me to not see some of those scenes and go, okay, they liked the season one actors and they were trying to bring some of them back.
Sure.
And it's not surprising to me that the scenes where we feel like they're deviating from the book and, like, interjecting something they wanted to interject because they liked the actors ends up being the weakest plot line of it. Like, we've covered this before on multiple show, multiple adaptations, where when it feels like the adapters of the visual format of the series is doing something because they like the actor. Oh, we got a good actor. We got to put him in more scenes. Oh, we like the good actor. We got to bring him back for another season or extend them, let him subsume other characters, this type of stuff. You hear it a lot in adaptations. That ends up being the weakest part.
A bit shoehorned, as it were.
Yeah, and it's not bad, but I think it's the weakest part of the season for sure. You and I had some text conversations about this week about the Daemon piece of this is, like, I think most people agree it's the weakest part of the season to the extent it's bothering people seems to be somewhat variable.
Mm-hmm. It feels like I'm hoping that they've got an overall purpose with it, because otherwise it feels like a bit of a waste of time. And it is a character that he's an awkward choice to waste time with, given that he's meant to be the most dynamic character in the entire damn show in terms of his multitudes, his complexity, his war within himself, his inability for anyone else to accurately be able to predict what he's going to be able to do. Him kind of sitting marinating at Harrenhal, I'm hoping it's going to have some purpose, and this episode implied to me a bit that it does, and I was hopeful for that, and I liked that scene with Alice Rivers kind of going in that direction, and his relationship with his brother is one of the relationships I found most compelling about him, and so spending a bit of time that was appreciated. But again, it's a build-up to what will hopefully be payoff next episode of what has been the purpose of this prolonged sojourn at Harrenhal, and I cannot be sure yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel good that that's going to pay off that well.
Do you find the sufficient payoff associated with Lannisters literally traveling with lions in giant crates?
I guess that's pretty cool. I mean, I think that there's some, we talked about this in the full recap. It does seem that George likes to show genetic traits in families,
yes.
Personality traits. And it seems like the
they
Lannisters
carry through.
Seems like the Lannisters have some of these, right? Like, kind of pompous, bullheaded. And the lions are sort of representative of that. I mean, I couldn't help but think when I saw, like, they had a lion, because, like, okay, what the fuck does that accomplish? Like, what are you doing? Like, this is such vanity to even bring this animal with you. Sure, there's no way it's trained, so that's just to have it. It's silly.
I'm reminded of, like, when the senior generals of the Ottoman Empire besieged Vienna. They brought a full circus with them so that when the Polish and German soldiers eventually took the Ottoman camp, they were then chasing, like, ostriches, trying to catch them as they were running through the camp. There's a certain element of that just unnecessary pageantry of, oh, of course they travel with lions. Who doesn't? That's the only way to go on the town. As you said, there is a commonality that George likes to pan across generations of where Lannisters are always Lannisters, Freys are always Freys. You can predict it whenever you see these characters put their various different points in the timeline.
Yeah, and Jason Lannister just falls right in. And it's sort of the worst elements of Jaime Lannister without the best elements of it. And Tylan is a sort of 1/10 version of Tywin, like 2/10 or something, like clearly interested in governance, clearly more of a thinker than than engaging in a lot of physicality, but nowhere near his level. But there's some remnants of those characters in what we're seeing from the Lannisters and their dumbass lines. The lions themselves, I guess, are fine. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really get
that. You didn't talk with them.
The lion might be okay, but it's sort of situationally dumb. The lion doesn't need to be there.
Very, very well said. How did you feel about the first days of Aemon's rule, his regency, as it were?
Seems like he's doing a great job. I think he's the guy we need for the time, Spencer, us Greens. He's the person we need for right now. The thing that he's clearly deficient at is anything that's not military, like anything at all. Mm-hmm. Because his inability to understand that the blockade is important and that the people in your own city liking you and being like, you know, reasonably healthy and fed and happy is like important. He just has missed that completely. Like he 100% at this point could take Vhagar out and burn up the blockade. 100% could do that. And he's choosing not to. He just keeps going, we'll deal with that at some point. I mean, I'm irritated with it, but we'll deal with that at some point. Rhaenys is not there anymore. He knows Daemon isn't near the blockade. He can go deal with it. He's choosing not to do it because it's just not important to him right now. Big miss on his part. Pretty good military commander, though.
I found it interesting that he seems to be aware in some ways that he has a lack of caring when it comes to domestic affairs, to the concerns of the small folk, and that he's the one that's recommending bringing back Otto Hightower, who, on the other hand, has decided to respond to text messages the same way I do and has just gone on silent.
Yeah, pretty much. He's having one of those Spencer weekends. It's like, you're just not going to get him. Although, I thought that little line from Gawain was interesting, where Gawain was like, you'll hear from him if you need to hear from him. And I felt like that didn't seem like a careless line.
It did.
I felt like a really purposeful line of dialogue of like, kind of speaking to us. Like, Otto will make himself known when he wants to make himself known, and he's got reasons for everything he's doing.
The man has priorities. He's clearly busy. You just need to respect that and acknowledge he will text back when he is ready and able to do so.
Yeah, and don't give him any shit about it because he's not going to hear it.
Nope.
Otto just doesn't hear that shit.
You saw how Otto acted in season two. He is not in the mood for this shit right now. Episode two, he's not in the mood for this shit right now.
But here's where the analogy falls apart, is that Otto was the lead texter early in this season.
Oh, yeah. He was texting everybody. Everybody. Check it in.
Hey, just let's see how you're doing. Just check it in. You know, just a little touch point here.
Coordinating cons going to. Just got to arrange these things. Get them worked out.
I got to make sure your parking's handled, okay? Like, let me make sure you have a parking spot. Yeah, so it's very different. And then the inclusion of Daeron. Like, I wanted to ask you about that. People call him Daeron. I've read it, Daeron, in my head for years now, so I shall call him Daeron.
It's got an E, for God's sake. You have to add it in.
Daeron, so how do you feel about the inclusion of this character? And I think you can answer that in two parts, right? There's the book reader side of you. Are you just happy he's there? But then also, like, how they've done it.
Unnecessary fumble. We've discussed this at season one. There was no reason to omit him. You could have set him up back then. It would not at all be as jarring. But that's just the world we're in. I adored that scene between Allison and her brother. I really liked that scene. I really liked the process of describing him. And ending on the word kind so delightfully spoke volumes and so perfectly spoke to Allison about what she wanted to know. She doesn't know her son. And they're putting us in the same eyesight that she has that we don't have perspective on either because she lacks it. We're going to get to meet him. But I thought that was a very interestingly done introduction of, we don't know him, the mother doesn't know him. What few words can tell us what we need to know? And ending on the word kind was a masterful choice. I think the show put itself in a very awkward bind by not at all even acknowledging the existence of this character previously. But as an episode to introduce him, I like how they did this. I found that was a very well done moment between two siblings, one of whom knows and one of whom doesn't, and telling us what we ourselves are now learning for the first time.
I feel like I could talk for a half hour about that sequence because I agree with you that how they have included the character is just a fumble. It's just fumble.
Yes.
Like one line of dialogue would have created consistency and nobody's having the conversation, but they just didn't include it because I don't think that they knew they wanted to include the character. It felt 100%. Like they did. And now they're including him, and so it seems kind of weird. But there was a lot of things going on in that sequence that I found interesting. First and foremost, like you gave me some credit earlier in the episode. What do? I just give it right back. You called that Gwyn Hathaway might be an okay dude. You were like, I think I might like him. And yeah, I like him. Like I know for sure I like him. He's a little bit of a smartass when we first first saw him, and he seemed like sort of the pompous prince, right? No, this is a good dude. Like you can tell, because the way he navigates Cole, he's doing his duty. He seems to be brave, and the way he was able to show kindness to a sister who probably wasn't always that kind, from alleviating her fear about Dairon, and then also comforting her and saying, "Hey, it was probably okay that I stayed behind at Highgarden. You don't need to feel guilt about that." You know, he could have gone in for the kill and been like, "Yeah, I know. You were always father's favorite." Like he hit her with that line. He was joking. He could have gone back in on that and continued to make her feel. Help her feel guilt about that, but he seemed to not want that for her, right? A lot of things in that sequence where I liked him. And we can also talk about how that whole crew, Cole's whole crew, is just fucking shot through. They are so fucked up about the dragons. Like, Gwyn was like, did you see the body language when he had to leave? He was like, I guess I'm leaving. Oh.
Man needs a vacation at best.
They're all fucked up in the game from the dragons. That was a traumatic thing for everybody on the field.
That is probably my favorite scene of the episode. It's an episode with a lot of great scenes, but I really liked how well that actor portrayed a character that is returning to a war that he has yet to recover from. And is yet to really be comfortable with the idea of marching back into. And then his relationship with the sister, the descriptions we get of it. Marvelously executed scene, I thought.
Yeah, that scene was fantastic. What else do we got this episode?
We got another riot in King's Landing. I feel like we need to get one or two of those every season.
We got a riot in King's Landing.
Huh.
I only really cared about Helaena in that sequence. I was like, are we really doing this to her? Like, what else can we dump on this character? Did she have to be included in this?
I think she did. And it's interesting too. We, you and I have pondered that they seem to be going in a different direction of this character. I'm now wondering whether they're picking a different source for trauma of where what seemed to scar her most previously was the small folk and people that she didn't know and people trying to put their emotions on her back during the funeral procession. That seemed like that was the thing that was most sticking with her, most difficult for her. Now they've done it again. And that can't be accidental that they keep having that similar kind of event happen to this character, and I wonder to what degree they're going to now reroute the character back into a more book-friendly direction as a result of just a different kind of focus on trauma.
Yeah. It seems like Jace got a little sideline this episode. Maybe Rhaenyra blaming him slightly for what happened to Stefan Darkly. I don't know if that's what she was thinking about or not.
It's interesting. It seems like she's resenting the idea of people questioning her, particularly coming now from what she views as her camp. And she does not like that her... I don't think her son was questioning her that much. I don't think his suggestion of getting Daemon back in the fold is at all a bad idea. I think it's something they inevitably kind of need to push. But because she is now so stubborn to create her own path and create her own image and earn loyalty through it, rather than other people and other things... The idea that he is voicing these concerns or making these suggestions, she now views as a negative, which I think is hyper-responding to a legitimate problem, but it is hyper-responding in the wrong direction to the wrong person with respect to it. And so it was interesting to see how quickly she was calling and pulling away from Jace, her stalwart, son and person that's by her side, because she's now so determined to create her own path.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're overall, you're right about the read between those two characters and the sort of the feeding of support versus questioning and how Rhaenyra is handling both of those things and how that's bleeding into a relationship with Jace. But I also kind of want to give Rhaenyra a little bit of a break of like, can everybody please stop bringing up the fact that she can't get on the same page with her husband in front of her. Like, it seems like everybody continues to bring it up to her. And it's, like, kind of an awkward thing and, like, a little bit rude to bring up to her, like, directly. Maybe Jace should get the pass. Maybe he's the one she shouldn't snap at. But she should start snapping at somebody about this because she's being brought up too much directly to her.
Is this the kind of situation where a friend has been separated and yet, and that's all everyone ever wants to talk about them is, how is separation going? Are you two trying to work things out? Are you trying to deal with things? He was like, I just want to go, you know, play, like, you know, laser tag or something. Can we just do anything other than talk about this place?
Yeah, it's pretty much anything with a relationship. Like, if you have a buddy who's, like, in a relationship and everybody's like, oh, God, would he just, like, get away from her? Like, he doesn't want to hear that. And the buddy who just got divorced, he doesn't want to talk about that either. The lady who just lost the meanest dragon in the realm with the fiercest warrior in the realm, she doesn't want to hear about that shit either. People don't want you to talk about their relationship problems to them. And you can bet she knows they need Caraxes. She's aware of that. Like, she sent one of her council members to go try to talk to Daemon. It's probably time to stop bringing that up to her. I found myself, like, while I did pledge allegiance to Team Green earlier this season, I found myself pretty sympathetic to Rhaenyra this episode. Like, I felt like she needed to smack her council member, Bartimos. She needed to give him she needed to round on that guy. She needed to push back, maybe not to Jace, but to someone about, please don't bring up Daemon around me anymore.
Yeah.
And I can see how she has been – I can see how now her – confidant is Nisaria, because Nisaria gave her a piece of advice. Like, it seems like people are giving her advice she already knows. Hey, Rhaenyra, you need an army. Hey, Rhaenyra, you need to get Caraxes. Hey, Rhaenyra, you need to get money. But Nisaria goes, here's a specialty you don't have that I have. Let me handle that for you. Like, that's a particularly useful thing as a leader when somebody comes to you, addresses you that way and goes, here's something I've got, like, I specialize in it, and I know how to do it, and I think it'll help you in this specific instance. Just give me leave to go do it.
What did you make of the scene with Rhaena over in the Eyrie, of where meeting with Lady Jane, going over to Pentos, but also, there may be a dragon afoot?
I mean, super obvious for our video audience. our podcast audience, it's a spoiler situation. I can't talk too much about it. I think I know where they're going with that storyline. Although I do think it's interesting that now the character that you thought was just dog shit boring, like, she was the most boring character ever put on television, Jane Eyre.
Not my words.
Good God, like, this lady. Could you just dress up a little or something? You were so bored by her.
get fucked.
She might have been fibbing a little bit to Rhaenyra. Maybe not. Maybe we can unding one of the Vhagar references. Maybe there was something else she was worried about descending from the sky, not necessarily just Vhagar. So I thought that was an interesting thing in the relationship with the Aarons.
I did like that. I found that an interesting touch. It added a certain degree of complexity and relevance to that storyline that otherwise just felt like we were just kind of, you know, checking in where various people are to remind us. That was a touch that gives me a lot of leave to ponder what they may be trying to work or consolidate or shift hats with respect to, and that could be fun.
Lady Aaron did not have sex with four or five people this episode, so
there's time. Spitzer, we got two episodes.
Spitzer was struggling to find her interesting, and then guess what? She did come through. She came through because she was lying about the threat of the dragon, because there's actually a big wild dragon near her. Now, she said something interesting. She said that we noticed it at the end of the war. What war is she talking about? What was that reference?
War in the Stepstones, maybe?
Maybe, but that's it. Like, that wouldn't. Yeah. Did everybody in the realm call that the war?
It's the closest thing they have to one in terms of anything resembling living memory, so maybe. I went back
could it
and
have been. Could how old is Sheepstealer? Sheepstealer's not from the Aegon Conquest time, right?
No. We can ponder this with Cannibal, because, you know, Cannibal you hate, giant question marks
doesn't
everywhere.
Fancy
maybe,
dragon.
Maybe. But Sheepstealer and Grey Ghost, relatively young. They're nothing resembling that turn of age going back to that. But I double-checked, and the show, back in later part of Season 1, did confirm there are three wild dragons. We had Daemon just, like, go through the list, and so there are three wild dragons.
Grey Ghost, Cannibal?
Didn't say their names, just said there are three wild dragons that nest at Dragonstone.
Oh, well, that nest at Dragonstone.
That's the, I'm just saying those are the ones we know exist. That's explicitly how he said it, is that we got three in storage, three nesting at Dragonstone, and the other ones are under, either currently under arms.
Interesting. Okay, well, yeah, I like that, and I think that needs to, I know Reyna is going through it right now. She's got a million things on her plate, but I think that piece of information needs to get back to Rhaenyra. It may not change how she interacts with Lady Arryn right now. No, right now, I think you continue what you're doing, but I think now you maybe change your approach when you are working or negotiating with her, because she's shown the ability to kind of not be completely truthful.
She's returning what has been offered in terms of, I made no terms with respect to why I was asking for a dragon. I made no suggestion about what dragons may or may not be already present. I'm responding to you offering me that thing as my dragon in terms of the terms of our treaty. All's fair in love and war.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little more sympathetic for Rhaenyra in that situation. You know, the parallel you're drawing, but like, Rhaenyra's done lost two dragons. Like, she doesn't have a lot of them. She doesn't have a lot of them. Maybe she'll send one when people start riding them around. Maybe she'll just send a couple over there.
At this point, she's relying on the Vale in the north to send her a field army that she presently entirely lacks. So there is a fair trade at play here, assuming the Knights of the Vale ever march.
What did you think of Rhaenyra just hopping on Cyrax to go check out who's riding Zeeswent?
I think Rhaenyra is trying to be a much more active leader, that she's trying to show decisive leadership. I think she also feels like there has never been anything that is more my domain, that I'm the dragon rider, I'm the dragon queen, that's my husband's ex-dragon, my ex-husband's dragon?
Annulled husband's ex-dragon.
Yes, those words. She's... This is something that she needs to get personally involved in. I think it's also just an element, too, of where she feels like, accurately, that she's been kept passive all season and has acted passively with respect to the war effort, and so this is something that she's not going to book any discussion about. She's going to confront it.
They have made a point of mentioning that she's a good dragon rider and that Cyrax is fast on the show.
Yes.
That was not necessarily the case in the book. Cyrax was slow and kind of lazy, and I don't think that spoiled. anybody thought Rhaenyra was a particularly good dragon rider in the book that I remember or could find. They've changed that in the show a little bit. So if the canon that they are pushing is that she is a better, her combo, right? Her and Cyrax are a better, faster driver or flyer than Jace is on Vermax or RX, right? Vermax or RX, one of the two.
Vermax, I think. Yeah, I think RX is the one that got chewed.
Vermax. If that's the case, then that's fine. But if it's just, I'm going just because I want to do something, I don't like that as much. Like, I want her to be more strategic. Like, I want it to not be running hot or cold, right? Because she'll go cold, too, where she doesn't do anything. I don't want her to just be running hot now where she's just like, no, I'm doing it. It needs to be like, well, Cyrax is faster. Cyrax is better. You've introduced a great idea for this, that maybe this is the reason that, like, Cyrax clearly knows sea smoke. Flew a lot. They flew a lot together. Now that didn't really, that didn't really stop, Meleys and Vhagar from fighting when they know each other clearly and had known each other.
Hey, buddy.
But yeah, it doesn't necessarily change things. But like those dragons are familiar, right? So maybe that's a reason too.
I did like that we got to see that Rhaenyra was backing actually strategic decisions. She even did a list of, I'm doing these five other things while I'm also doing this other thing, of where this is a Rhaenyra that's actually actively being involved in a way that was getting frustrating she wasn't before, where her options are limited, her armies aren't there, she's pondering whether she can win this war, but she's at least making moves, and making a lot of them. And we got to see this episode, particularly the ones that are associated around King's Landing, appear to be already paying dividends in a way that things have not for her since really kind of like the end of last season, the beginning of this season.
I guess the only other thing I have to tell you is I really enjoyed the first few minutes when I got to see Corlys right hand, right next to Rhaenyra, ready to go. He was dressed to the nines, and he has clearly pulled himself up out of it to the extent enough to assume the role and perform the duties.
Yeah, I feel like I was a little bit unfair to him over the last couple episodes we've talked about it. I do forget at times that he has lost literally everyone.
Everybody. It's like all by himself.
Both his children, his brother, his wife. It's been a rough road for Corlys over two seasons. The fact he's able to even to just participate is impressive enough, but I'm looking forward to him acting the man the legends have painted him as. If anything, it's more impressive if he's able and will be able to do so in light of all the tragedy that has befallen him.
I think it's the right move. He is the most capable of the people committed to her.
Of her only army that she has in the form of her fleet at present.
Right. And it's the best move for him, right? Everybody agrees differently, but most people need something to do. I mean, just, you know, not to just lay around, right? So I think that's probably a good move for both of them. I like seeing it. I got a little pop out of that. I was cheering at the screen.
And we saw its effects immediately of where his presence in the room, this was the most organized and least backbiting Black Council we've yet seen on the series. Of where his presence, him serving with his hand, it silences a lot of the unnecessary spittle that has been characterizing most of their meetings. We still got to see Lord Barnabas do that wonderful moment of just saying, I don't want to say I told you so, but I feel obliged to say I told you so, but he got a proper slap in the face for that in private. But
as he should.
I feel like what we've already seen, the Sea Snake being at her side is going to have a positive effect on her overall war effort.
Do you think that they're going to lean hard into the Dragon Chooses Its Rider, and the lesson that Rhaenyra is going to take from this is, we can't bring people to the dragons. We got to take the dragons to the people and just let the two big dragons that she's got there go.
I'm curious about it. It's an interesting way they've done this, of where it's similar to what we talked about, you know, the reveal to Allison about how Daeron works being revealed to us as well. The reveal to how the dragons work is now also is going to be revealed to Rhaenyra at the same time as it is us. So we're going to have to unpack what that means and how they should use that. Live come next episode. Vermithor
go. Just go. Silverwing go.
Yeah, let's just let Vermithor and Silverwing to second and third large, well, maybe second and third. Who knows about the cannibal? Can't really say. Among the largest dragons in the realm, just he exists. He's on the show. He's been talked about.
Yeah, he fucks everything up, though. See, you were in the middle of something. You had to stop and go, well, who knows about the cannibal? See, this is why cannibal sucks.
Why cannibal's great, and you're eventually going to accept this. But letting the two of the largest dragons and oldest dragons, former dragons of kings and queens, just roam free in the wilderness, something they're definitely not inclined to do. But the fact that they now have a dragon to a rider in a way that they previously were now thinking was impossible, or at least would involve a lot more noble incineration, it's got to give them ideas. Got to lead them to ponder how they can actually work this going forward in a way they didn't previously understand.
That's maybe where we're going. I think it might be, hey, Vermithor, get out there.
You go find yourself somebody.
Well, because like they're not going to be able to bring a heck of a lot of other nobles in there to try to. I mean, that point got brought up in the show. They're not going to be able to bring very many other people in there to try this.
It may also lead them to ponder as well that, oh, a bastard, an unrecognized bastard of a minor noble family, somebody that would be beneath our notice is now riding a dragon. Maybe we should broaden our definition of who we're deeming worthy of making this attempt.
I don't like the dragon's pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the answer. Anything else you want to talk about this episode?
No, I thought this was a good episode. I liked it quite a bit. I feel like it's going to give us a lot of meat for discussion. And it felt breezy. Some parts of the last episode, I wouldn't describe them as a slog, but they felt long. This one did not feel that way. I felt like these scenes were well-structured and laced together, so the episode moved along at a very appropriate clip.
And this was actually longer. This was actually a longer episode than the last one. So it's interesting that you say that. Last episode, I very much had the feel that we were reading epic fantasy. We were jumping from set to set. We were moving plot lines together. It was a lot of like short dialogue over here and then cut over here and then over here. And then you have to remember all the characters. This was a little bit of that, but you're right. That I think that there was a little bit long. The scenes were a little longer. We stayed with individuals longer. I'm not sure we jumped quite as many settings.
I don't think so.
And the episode did flow really well. I was pleased with it, and I think that we're getting somewhere with the Daemon plot line. I mean, if anything, I feel like Alice Rivers gave us where we were going with that, right? Because she said do nothing for now. In 3 days' time, the winds will shift. I felt like that was something I needed to tell you when you're getting frustrated about the Damon plotline. Is to say, do nothing for now. 3 days' time,
winds will shift. What you were doing was Sir Simon Strong going, shh, 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 with a knife against my throat. Like, it's okay. Okay.
3 days' time. We're all good. Yeah. All right. Well, good. Fun episode. Enjoyed chatting with you about it. Spencer, we'll be back midweek. I'll be back on Wednesday night to talk through the whole thing, break it down line by line like we always do here on Manga Talks TV. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a great start to your week. We'll see you later.